Good evening, everybody. You're tuned to 103.2 Dublin City FM, and this is Europe Today, with your presenter for this week, John Bourne. Coming up on tonight's programme, we'll be speaking to Janet McLean, curator of European art at the National Gallery of Ireland, about their new landmark exhibition based around the works of Dutch artist Piet Mondrian. We'll have a rundown of some of the stories of European interest that have made the headlines here in Ireland, and we'll also have some great music from Hungary and from the Czech Republic for your enjoyment as well. So stay tuned to us here on 103.2 Dublin City FM for the next half an hour and your programme, Europe Today. The European Commission is to tighten its rules in the area of online spending. It says the COVID-19 pandemic has revealed that purchasing online and the provision of refunds has turned out to be a bad experience for millions of consumers right across the European Union. A major review into consumer engagement with established and scam operators will get underway in early 2021. Cyril Sullivan of the European Consumer Centre in Dublin says the review will cover a wide range of areas.
That includes infringement of consumer rights, the likes of cancelled airline flights, cancelled events, cancelled hotels, and the infringement of consumer rights where people were entitled to refund and didn't receive them. There are also issues in terms of consumer scams and also fraud with online shopping. So there are a number of issues that the consumer are very concerned about during COVID-19 that affect consumers.
Ireland is making slow progress in reducing greenhouse gas emissions. New figures from the European Commission show that since 2005, the European Union has reduced its emissions by 19%. Emissions have now been reduced by 24% compared to 1990 levels. Tim Hayes of the European Commission says the figures for Ireland since 2005 show a decrease of 14%.
The EU is making progress. In fact, for the last 15 years, the reduction in greenhouse gas emissions is 19%. Ireland isn't doing too badly either. For that same period, Ireland's greenhouse gas emissions is down by 14%.
Cannabis use among Irish secondary school students is higher than the EU average. 19% of students surveyed had used it at least once, while 9% reported use in the past month. New figures from the EU Drugs Agency show that on average, 1 in 5 Irish school students reported having used an illicit drug at least once in their life. The figure for the rest of the EU is slightly lower at 1 in 6. Grace Bolton of the European Commission Office in Ireland says strategies are being worked on to reduce the level of drug consumption by students.
These figures show that secondary school students in Ireland appear to have more of an issue with drug taking than their peers in other EU member states. The European Commission is committed to gathering information that will enable us to better understand the patterns of drug use, which are critical for designing robust and more targeted policies.
Recently, the European Commission proposed to modernise EU legislation on batteries, delivering its first initiative among the actions announced in the new Circular Economy Action Plan. Batteries that are more sustainable throughout their life cycle are key for the goals of the European Green Deal and contribute to the zero pollution ambition set in it. They promote competitive sustainability and are necessary for green transport, clean energy, and to achieve climate neutrality by 2050. The proposal addresses the social, economic, and environmental issues related to all types of batteries. Here is Vice President for Interinstitutional Relations, Maros Sekovic.
I'm really thrilled to stand here today because we are taking another giant leap forward into the greener future. Our proposal on batteries will not only modernize the EU's legislative framework, but once adopted, it will also revolutionize the battery market. First, let me take you back 3 years ago. At that time, the EU battery industry was hardly on the map. Today, though, Europe is a global battery hotspot with some 15 gigafactories emerging across our member states. And by 2025, we should be manufacturing enough battery cells each year to power at least 6 million electric cars. In other words, we are well on track towards strategic autonomy in this increasingly important sector. The global demand for batteries is expecting to see a 14-fold increase by 2030. The EU could account for some 17% of that demand and thus would become the second largest market behind China. But a green, sustainable future, which Europe has signed up to, should be powered by green, sustainable batteries. And this clearly requires a new future-proof regulatory framework to ensure that only the greenest, best-performing and safest batteries make it onto the EU market. To set such a global golden standard has been among the key priorities under the European Battery Alliance, and today we are delivering. In fact, it will help accelerate our own work. All industrial players in Europe will now have a clear, predictable legal environment that supports them in innovating and preparing for the expanded surge in electromobility by 2023. In practice, it means that batteries placed on our market, regardless of their origin, will be sustainable, circular, high-performing and safe along the entire life cycle. That they will be repurposed, collected and recycled, becoming a source of valuable secondary raw materials. For this, the proposal establishes specific requirements at each stage of the battery value chain. The new sustainability requirements, in particular, are a real game changer.
Nebude lehké ze skály se rozběhnout, jako malé alky do vody vplout. Hladové srdce ti cestu napoví, poslouchej, jak buší. Nadechni se s divokou silou, dva světy dělené hladinou. V takovou chvíli buď si jist sám sebou, instinkty tuší. Nečekej moc, za očima se dívej, na horizontu dvě slunce spí. Je místo, kde už tě čekají, co tě nezabije, to tě posílí. Nečekej moc, za očima se dívej,
Peter Cornelius Mondrian was a Dutch painter and theoretician who was regarded as one of the greatest artists of the 20th century. He is known for being one of the pioneers of 20th century abstract art, as he changed his artistic direction from figurative painting to an increasingly abstract style until he reached a point where his artistic vocabulary was reduced to simple geometric elements. The National Gallery of Ireland has reopened after the lockdown with a landmark exhibition of work by Pete Mondrian, the first of the artist's work to be held in Ireland. Joining us now on the line for the National Gallery is Curator of European Art and Co-Curator for the Mondrian Exhibition, Janet McLean. Hello, Janet. Thanks so many for taking the time out to talk to us here on Europe Today. Janet, first of all, can I ask you, why Mondrian and why now?
In recent years, the National Gallery's really had quite a few exhibitions of 20th century artists, modern artists. They've had Edward Munch, we've had Emil Mills, Katie Kollowitz, and last year we had an exhibition on the work of Bauhaus printmakers, and we think it's really important to show works by these artists in Ireland because we don't have collections of their work in Ireland, so people don't really have an opportunity to see them. Unfortunately, we don't have a Mondrian painting in our collection, and no other public gallery in Ireland does. So it's really important. We know that our visitors enjoy seeing them, and also that they're really important exhibitions in terms of education and public engagement. I mean, Irish people, you know, are exceptionally well travelled and are art savvy, but there's nothing really like seeing a show like this at home and in Dublin. There's nothing like seeing it here and seeing it in person. You can look at Mondrian online, but until you see the real painting in front of you, there's nothing like it.
Right,
you
know, yeah.
So we are just in keeping with our 20th century programme and trying to bring art by these artists to our visitors.
And had you a particular affiliation for Mondrian yourself?
Well, no, I work in 19th and 20th century art. So Mondrian is such an influential artist, really, that he influences all modern painting in one way or another, whether artists are responding positively to him or his work or reacting against him. So I have a real interest in Mondrian. And our director, Sean Rainberg, had previously worked in the Tate Gallery, and he had worked in an exhibition of Mondrian's work before there. And one of our previous colleagues who's left the gallery, he was actually Dutch, Adrian Vibor.
Right.
Worked in more old master painting, but he did our Vermeer exhibition a few years ago. And as a Dutchman, Mondrian featured largely in his upbringing and in his art education. So he made the initial contact with the Kunstmuseum in The Hague, where most of the works have come on loan from. So that's where the collection started. It started, like all exhibitions, it started with conversations which developed over a matter of time.
Right, yeah. That's a water cooler conversation or something, and then it just expands then at that stage. Is that the way it works?
Exactly, you know.
Well, speaking of difficulties, the logistics and setting up the exhibition and stuff like that must have been very, very difficult for you this year because of everything that's going on. How did that all come about?
We were in the same boat as everyone else, but behind the scenes, you know, when you walk into an exhibition, you don't really see all the nuts and bolts that go on behind it. There's quite a few years of planning in an exhibition. So we've been having conversations with the Kunstmuseum in The Hague, where most of the works have come along from, and with other lenders, the Tate and National Gallery of Scotland, for quite a few years. So most of the exhibition was really ready to go, when everything happened in March with COVID. And so, like everybody else, we've had to be flexible and just, we had all the plans in place, but it was just a question of whether we could forge ahead and get going. Unfortunately, we could. So we just tried to be as positive as possible, hope that we would be open, and kept planning. And so, I think there's a lot of goodwill between museums and galleries across the world, actually. And so everyone was facing the same challenges, and other museums and institutions were really generous and flexible, and likewise we were with them if other museums are borrowing artworks from us. So there were a lot of Zoom meetings and discussions like that. But mostly it was, you know, we've got a really good, we have so many people working in the gallery,
yeah.
And people from who've faced all sorts of challenges. So we kind of did a bit of learning on the job, but we got there in the end. I mean, there were things that were quite unusual for us. For example, usually when you install an exhibition, we would have our team of paintings conservators on site, and then perhaps you would have a conservator come from the other institution, the lending institution, and they would work together to make sure that once the artworks were unpacked, that they were in good shape and there was, you know, there were no problems. And on this occasion, we did it via Zoom. So we had the camera on the trolley. So the paintings conservators in the Kunstmuseum were watching our conservators in Ireland and holding the camera up and just inspecting the paintings in that way. But, you know, it worked very, very well, you know, because they're all really good at what they do. And so that was interesting. But, you know, we made it work, and thankfully we were able to open as well.
I think it was probably almost a walk of art, actually, for the logistics, as I said, to actually ship it, because everybody's having trouble getting anything from anywhere at the moment.
Yeah, it was finally, it was like choreographed, like a yeah. like a fine dance. It worked well, though, you know. But honestly, I think it helps because everybody else is in the same boat. So yeah, museums yeah. in Britain, in France, in the Netherlands, we're all in the same boat. And so everyone steps up pretty fast. And it's really fascinating. You learn from each other too, you know.
The exhibition started on the 1st of December, is that right?
No, the exhibition, it was supposed to open at the start of October, yeah. but it opened last Tuesday, and it's open until the 14th of February, Valentine's Day. And it's been hugely popular so far. Last weekend, the first weekend, sold out completely, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And this weekend coming is selling out too. So it'd be great if people can, like everything, can plan in advance. And the tickets are at different prices for different times too. And we're open a bit later in the evening. So there's lots of opportunities to see it, to see the exhibition. And one of the lovely things, I suppose, a terrible positive of the thing at the moment is because visitor capacity is reduced, you really do get a very intimate insight into the exhibition. It's not, you know, when you go to the show, it's not packed full of people.
Right, yeah,
so you get
yeah.
a bit more breathing space and space yourself to see the pictures up closer in a quiet space, which is lovely.
And what has been the most popular part of the exhibition so far?
I think it's almost a bit surprising to me to see how much people love Mondrian. You know, at first you kind of imagine maybe the abstract geometric paintings might be a wee bit off-putting for people, but I think everyone knows his work so well. Even if they don't know his name, they know his work from posters and fridge magazines and design. If you even think of, you know, years ago there was L'Oreal hair gel that had the design. Like, people are familiar with that kind of geometric style painting. So I would say those paintings are hugely popular. And I think it's the first time in Ireland people have been able to see the real thing here. So the grid paintings in his later career are very popular. But also I think visitors have been really surprised by Mondrian's journey. You know, he spent almost 5 decades of painting before sort of 35 years of painting before he got to that abstract style. So I think people are really interested in, he did a lot of really beautiful paintings with really highly saturated colors of the seaside, the Netherlandish seaside. So you get beautiful paintings of dunes and skies and beaches. And they're really popular as well. I think everybody needs a bit of warmth and light at the moment. So when you go into that section of the exhibition, so you've had a sort of vitamin D boost, you know, so, and they're really surprising. They're very different from the abstract paintings. So they're very familiar, very popular as well with visitors.
There's also a few other artists included as well. Are there any Irish artists that have been inspired by or influenced by, how do we pronounce it, the style or the style?
Yeah. Well, I say the style, and some people say the style, the style, the style. I think you said anyway. But yes, I think, well, mostly designers and architects would be influenced by that. I mean, furniture design, graphic design, artists. I think, you know, when you think of modernist architects like Michael Scott, who designed Bassaris, and I love Bassaris, but that modernist design is stripping away of all the sort of Victorian detail and frills and fanciness and getting back to simplicity of materials and the vertical and horizontal lines. So in 20th century architecture, the style would be hugely influential right across the board. And in terms of fine art, and Mondrian, I suppose, wasn't so well known. People, you know, when we think back, people were looking at art through black and white illustrations and reproductions for many, many years, you know. And so his paintings probably didn't filter into Ireland until, I would say, the late 50s or 60s, probably after his death. But one artist who would have been influenced him would be Brian O'Doherty, who's 92 years old this year. He was an Irish artist born in Roscommon who moved to Manhattan in the 1950s. And Mondrian himself lived in New York from 1940 until he passed away in 1944. So Brian O'Doherty would have been really part of the New York art scene, and his work at various points is definitely influenced by Mondrian.
Jana, you have a whole load of associated programs as well related to the exhibitions. Where can people find out a bit more about what's going on, and how can they book tickets and stuff like that?
Well, our website is the best place to go to book tickets for the exhibition and for various events. We have, I mean, as you know, everyone have had to move online, so we have talk and teas, like talks online, and we'll have several podcasts. One with Emily Conway, who's a jazz musician. Mondrian was really interested in jazz. He loved jazz music, so Emily's doing a podcast and performing. And then we have another podcast related to architecture as well.
Amazing,
and so yeah. that will be. So if you go to our website, and www.nationalgallery.ie, you'll find all the information and all the ways to buy tickets for things on that.
And again, Jana, we have to emphasise that I think it's essential that people actually book the exhibition as well, isn't it? You won't be you can't just rock up and gain admission, can you? I think it has to be booked in, does it?
I can't quite hear you. Yes, no, booking the exhibition is the best way to do it, because it's best, and then you're guaranteed a spot. And there's tickets at all different price ranges as well, and at different slots of the day. So if you come midweek, you're going to have a better chance than on a Saturday morning. But there's still lots of availability. It's open until the 14th of February.
Jana, you'd be very, very good to take the time out to talk to us here on Europe Today. And I'm looking forward to the exhibition. I have my ticket booked, and I won't tell anybody when I'm going to be there, because it'll be a surprise. It'll be like what do you call those people? The surprise shopper. I'll just... I don't want our legion of fans following me down, but I have my ticket booked. I'm really looking forward to it. I lived in Utrecht for a while. I don't know whether that's where my interest came from or whatever, in Mondrian, but again, as you said,
lots of early early landscapes. You'll be able to see lots of irrigation ditches and windmills painted in every style, so it's really... You really do get a sense, and that's the lovely thing about the exhibition related to Europe. You do get the sense that even though Mondrian today is seen as this modern painter, he's the archetypal modernist. But when you go to the exhibition, you'll see his Dutch and his European roots there. And then, you know, he's in the Netherlands, he moved to Paris, moved to London. And so he's very much a European.
Thanks so much again, Jana, for taking the time out to talk to us here on Europe Today.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Szememben nézhetsz, míg alszik a város, ugye milyen más ott, ott benn, a széltől már most. Viaros a tájtán, felhőt sose láttál, mégis ez igéz meg, itt van ez a lélek.
Ne szedeked, kócos én. vidéki sanzon, olyan gyönyörű vagy, fejem öletbe hajtom, aztán beborul az ég is, s te maradni akarsz mégis, reményteli szemmel, így múlnék el én is. Tudom, én értem, külön utakon járok, te meg véletlen épp érted a világot, és a jól sejtem, nem lesz ez egyszerű velem, nesze neked kócos érzelem.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week's folks. I hope you've enjoyed the programme. Again, we want to say a massive big thank you to Janet McLean, curator at the National Gallery of Ireland. If you want to get in contact with us, give us a ring on 865 8020. That's 865 8020. You can text us on 087 977 1032. 087 977 1032. And don't forget to check out our support website platform. That's europetoday.ie. That'll have a podcast of today's programme and a link to the various items that we spoke about as well. Join us again here on 103.2 Dublin City FM at the same time next week on your programme, Europe Today.